It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, from 1984 to The Handmaid's Tale, there are a lot of scary visions of the future out there. We'll hear about an effort to create positive science fiction that could be a realistic roadmap for humankind.
First, all eyes are on Europe as President Trump prepares to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin tomorrow. They'll meet at the G20 summit in Germany.
The meeting follows Trump's speech to a friendly crowd in Poland, describing a clash of civilizations. He talked about defending Western values in the face of terrorism. Here's a listen.
The fundamental question of our time is whether the West has the will to survive. Do we have the confidence in our values to defend them at any cost? Do we have enough respect for our citizens to protect our borders? Do we have the desire and the courage to preserve our civilization in the face of those who would subvert and destroy it?
The president's visit, including the meeting with Putin, is raising questions about just how Trump will work with key NATO allies. It also raises questions about future U.S.-Russia relations as investigations into ties with the Kremlin continue at home.
Charles Kupchan joins us now. He's a professor of international affairs at Georgetown University and senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. Charles, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Let's start with the president's appearance there in Poland, talking about Western values, the need to defend them. Was that an attempt to show interest in working with European allies, a sense of solidarity building there?
It was. You know, this was President Trump's second bite at the apple. He went to Europe a couple of weeks ago, and it went over with a thud, in part because he didn't affirm what's called Article 5, which is the U.S. commitment via NATO to collective defense. And he soon thereafter pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreement. And the Chancellor of Germany went off and said, geez, we can't rely on our friends like we used to. Maybe Europe has to take its destiny into its own hands. So I think today's visit in Poland was an effort to undo some of the damage that was done. He did reaffirm America's commitment to collective defense. He did talk about Atlantic solidarity. Exactly which Western values he wants to reaffirm remains unclear, because like the government of Poland, his government veers in a somewhat illiberal direction when it comes to some of the traditional Western values of open media what you might call speaking truth rather than obfuscating the truth. But it was something that many Europeans, particularly in Poland, will be happy to hear.
Let's talk about that setting of Poland. I think it was Donald Rumsfeld back in the Bush administration, the George W. Bush administration, who talked about old Europe, you know, Western Europe, they don't like us as much anymore. But new Europe, places like Poland, they're our friends for the United States. Is there a more enthusiastic reception for President Trump in a place like Poland than in Western Europe?
No question. The Polish electorate has put in power a law and justice party that veers to the right. It's nationalist, it's populist, shares a lot of common ground with Donald Trump on issues of, let's say, coal mining, on issues of trying to slow down, if not halt, immigration. And so he got a warmer reception in Poland than he will get at the G20 in Hamburg. It's also the case that the government bust in some people who were supportive of Trump, because like in the United States, the urban dwellers tend to be more liberal center left, the rural dwellers more conservative and center right. But in general, Poland is still a very pro-American country. And in that respect, Trump did go to a place where he got a warm welcome.
The president, as we mentioned, is meeting with Russian President Putin. Western Europe watching that carefully, of course. But also, is Poland, places like that, closer to the Russian border, do they have mixed feelings about the president's relationship with Vladimir Putin?
Well, I think Poland and its neighbors, they're more comfortable now than they were a few months ago, because the president, as a candidate, and then soon after taking power, talked about NATO as being obsolete, was reluctant about affirming the collective defense commitment, talked about throwing Ukraine under the bus. And over the last few months, he's taken a much more conventional position. He met with Petro Poroshenko, the Ukrainian president. The administration applied new sanctions against Russia for its actions in Ukraine. He went to Poland today, which is a frontline state, if you will, and he called out Russia for its destabilizing activities. So I don't think it's going to be a very easy conversation tomorrow between Trump and Putin. And certainly the swirl that's continuing in Washington over Russian interference in the election here and what role the Trump campaign may have played in that interference, that is a difficult backdrop for the meeting.
Talking to Charles Kupchan right now from Georgetown University and the Council on Foreign Relations, looking at the president's visit to Europe, the G20 summit, his upcoming meeting with Russian President Putin. Let's focus in on that meeting with Vladimir Putin. What do we know about how this meeting is being set up? Who's at the table? How open it's going to be, if they're going to talk to press, anything like that?
Well, we hear that Putin asked for a one-on-one with no one else in the room except the interpreters, and that seems to have been walked back in favor of a larger meeting. There are two options. One would be to have what's called a pull-aside, and that would be a fairly small and a short meeting, maybe three aside, including the leaders and the interpreters. Or you could go for a full-on bilateral meeting, more formal, more people at the table, lasts longer. My understanding is that they have gone for that last option. That, number one, elevates the meeting. It makes it longer and more substantive. Two, it puts more people at the table. And we do know that Trump's advisors did not want him alone with Putin. They want to make sure that they hear the conversation. They want to make sure that everything that's discussed is accurately heard. I don't know if there is going to be a press conference. My guess is that there would not be. I'm expecting this meeting to really be about relationship building, trying to forge a bond between the two leaders. We haven't really seen much homework done in the past few weeks between Russians and Americans on Syria, on Ukraine, on hacking, the kind of spade work that you would need if one were to be hopeful that there would be a concrete deliverable out of the meeting.
Right. If I were drawing up an agenda, I could put things like North Korea, Syria, Ukraine, the Crimea part of the Ukraine, Russian threats to Western Europe, the interference you just mentioned, U.S. sanctions on Russia. This doesn't sound like the kind of meeting that's going to be a comprehensive look at all that stuff.
I agree. I mean, that's a great list that you just put out. And I hope that they get to at least some of it. I think Syria and Ukraine are the two issues on the top of the agenda. North Korea also, although that probably will get addressed more with Xi Jinping, the leader of China, than it will with Mr. Putin. But I do worry that in part because the Trump administration doesn't have its high-level people in place, it's just not been able to do the homework to get the people that they need to deal with this issue.
We're talking to Charles Kupchan, senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, looking at President Trump's trip to Europe and his upcoming planned meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin.
And you can tell us what you think at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. What do you think of President Trump's recent speech in Poland? And are you hoping to see him work closely with European allies? What do you want to see come out of the president's meeting with Vladimir Putin? And how do you think it should be approached? You can call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. We're picking up our conversation with Charles Kupchan, senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, looking at President Trump's trip to Europe and upcoming meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin.
And you can join our conversation. Tell us what you think at 800-642-1234. Also post on the Central Time Facebook page. What do you think about President Trump's call to defend Western values? Do you think the president should be forging stronger ties with European allies? And do you think that the president will have a meaningful conversation conversation with Russian President Vladimir Putin, and what do you think the risks are there? You can call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Charles, as I understand it, you've been at the table at one point with former President Obama and Vladimir Putin. What is it like being in a negotiating room with the Russian president?
Well, the meeting that you're referring to was at the G20 in China late in 2016. And there, most of the conversation was about, as we were talking about a second ago, Syria and Ukraine. In that case, John Kerry, the Secretary of State, had basically been talking till he was blue in the face with Lavrov, the foreign minister of Russia, to try to get a deal on Syria, a political settlement, and hopefully... I think President Obama was hoping we'd close that deal in the meeting with Putin in China. It didn't happen. Putin is a very wily guy. You never quite know what you're getting. He's also a pro, so you have to be very careful in meetings with him. But I think that the core problem with Mr. Putin is that he has essentially attached his legitimacy to standing up to the West, to doing things like going into Ukraine and supporting Assad. And given that he doesn't have much else to sort of lean on when it comes to his political power in Russia, it's been very hard to get cooperation from him. And that's why I think President Trump has been a little bit naive when he thinks that he's going to be able to carve out some kind of bromance with this guy.
Are there places where there are common interests between the United States and Russia and the leaders thereof where there could be maybe even a small area to work together and maybe develop a small level of trust?
I think that's the way you have to go. You have to start small and try to build enough common ground that you can take the next step. And I would probably put Syria at the top of the list. And that's in part because Assad, for better or for worse, has made significant gains on the battlefield with the help of Russia and Iran, and to some extent Turkey, which has been a part of that dialogue. And so I think it's time for the United States to find some way of working with those parties in a way to bring the conflict to an end. We have different views about Assad's future than does Russia. But at the same time, I think both the Russians and the Americans and all the parties would like to see the conflict come to an end, would like to focus military efforts against ISIL, because ISIL poses a threat to all of us. So I would probably start there. That's where I think the common interests are going to be easiest to uncover.
I want to go back to Western Europe and our longtime allies there. You wrote recently after the president's previous visit to Europe that we may be seeing a big change in the Atlantic Alliance, where we had seen decades of sacrificing maybe your country's interest in the short run for the long-term peace and stability. We're moving back to more of an old school, a World War I style mentality. Can you talk about that a little more?
Yeah, the Trump administration doesn't seem to put a lot of stock in the idea of an Atlantic community of democracies with deeper roots, with a kind of institutionalized social core that that essentially holds us together. And in fact, right after that last trip to Europe, the Trump administration pulled out of the climate agreement, the Paris Climate Agreement, one of only two other countries, Syria and Nicaragua, that had not joined up. And then there was an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal that basically said, this is a dog-eat-dog world where each nation is out for itself. And that's a very different kind of approach to global affairs than we've seen from every president from World War II on. And that has led to a situation in where the Western Europeans are really questioning whether we are still by their side. And I'm guessing that the conversation that took place between German Chancellor Merkel and President Trump about an hour ago was not a very pleasant conversation, because she's the host of the G20. She's got to put out some kind of statement at the end. Normally, that statement represents a consensus position of all the members. But when you have an America that is basically broken with the mainstream on climate, basically doesn't share the view of Europeans on refugees and immigration, seems to be backing away from free trade, it's going to be very hard to find common ground.
And you also wrote in that piece about what kind of course Germany and other European Union nations could chart now, given that they don't necessarily think they can rely on the United States. What do you see in their future?
Well, this may be Europe's moment. Despite the fact that the United Kingdom is in the process of exiting from the European Union, the elections in France brought to power a very pro-European member, somebody who really wants to invest in European integration. And it may be that for the foreseeable future, Europe has to hold down the fort on key issues like fighting climate change, like free trade, like dealing in a humanitarian way with refugee flows, and then wait and see where the United States ends up after the midterms and after the next presidential election. I'm not suggesting that Europe is going to turn its back on the Trump administration, but I do think it will say, we're going to get on with these important international tasks. We continue to believe that there is a community of democracies out there. The door is open to Mr. Trump, and we hope he comes our way. And it's interesting that the new French president, Emmanuel Macron, invited Trump to come to the Bastille Day celebrations on July 14th in Paris. Trump has accepted. And so in some ways, what we see here is a Europe that will do what it thinks is necessary to keep the West together and at the same time reach out to Trump and hope that it can build a working relationship, even though it won't be easy.
Talking to Charles Kupchan, he's a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. Looking at President Trump's Europe trip, the G20 summit going on, the president expected to meet tomorrow with Russian President Vladimir Putin amid the backdrop of conflict here at home over Russia's role in last year's election. And let's turn to that point now, Charles. How much, no matter who the president is, how much does having this domestic turmoil related to a particular foreign power, in this case Russia, tie the hands of a president and his team when it comes to meeting and negotiating with that power?
Well, the president today did finally admit that, yeah, he thinks that the Russians did intervene, although he said, we never know. So he continues to cast doubt over the whole issue. But it does make it more difficult, and that's because there's a continuing swirl in Washington stemming from the Justice Department investigation, stemming from in congressional inquiries into exactly what the Russians did and what role, if any, the Trump campaign may have played in coaching, encouraging, colluding with the Russians. We simply don't know. There may be no connection. There may be a deep connection. But the fact that people are continuing to dig, they are continuing to wonder why Trump came into office so keen on building a bromance with Putin, does make many of us wonder what skeleton is in the closet. But that generally makes it hard for Trump to reach out to Putin at the meeting tomorrow, because people are always wondering, what's he up to? What does Putin have on Trump? Why, despite the fact that Putin has been such a tough customer, is Trump trying to make nice to him?
I want to get into the bigger picture of what's going on with international relations now. Getting back to that point of maybe we're moving away from this Atlantic community of democracies. You wrote about a transactional approach from the president, saying basically what's in it for the United States when it comes to trade or other negotiations. People point toward places like Turkey and the Philippines, where elected governments are moving toward a more authoritarian style. Are we seeing a really major fundamental shift in international politics now?
I don't think we have enough water under the bridge to answer that very important question. The fact that you are asking it and that many people are pondering it speaks volumes, because it does mean that it is conceivable that the era that opened up with Pearl Harbor, which is really the beginning of Pax Americana, that era could be coming to a close. And it could be coming to a close because the two countries most responsible for building that order, the United Kingdom and the United States, are unsure that they want to continue to support it. The UK has already voted to get out of the EU, one of the most advanced organizations, supranational bodies in the world. The United States has elected a president that seems ambivalent about globalization, that seems unsure whether he wants to continue to invest in a strong relationship with democratic allies. So we're going to have to wait and see. I do think, though, that Trump will find over time that the Atlantic democracies, whether he likes them or not, are the best friends that we have. And that's because when you call up the Chinese or the Indonesians or the Indians and the Brazilians and you say, are you going to send peacekeepers here? Are you prepared to send a field hospital to fight Ebola? What are you going to do about ISIL? Are you sending F-16s to bomb ISIL in Syria? They generally hang up the phone. When you call Europe, they don't necessarily give you everything that you want, but they try to step up to the plate. So even for a transactional president like Mr. Trump, I think over time, he will find that our European allies are still the best friends that we have in the world, and he may come back to them.
As we wrap up, a big question, should we, as the United States, continue to try to uphold stability around the world as we started to during and after World War II, or is it time for us to step back?
I think that President Trump is certainly on to something when he talks about our allies needing to share more of the burden. And I think we learned our lesson in Libya, Iraq, Afghanistan, that trying to turn such countries into Ohio or Wisconsin, for that matter, that's a bridge too far. And so I do think that the United States is going through a more programmatic shift to lighten its load. It started under Obama. It's continuing under Trump. But it needs to be handled very tactfully and very carefully. I think the U.S. needs to choose its fights carefully. That doesn't mean we should end our role as the provider of order, as the fireman if necessary, but it just does mean that we need to be careful that we don't expend ourselves in a place like Iraq or Afghanistan when we ought to be looking at the big picture, which is China, Russia, and making sure that global stability doesn't erode because there's nobody minding the store.
Charles, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That's Charles Kupchan, professor of international affairs at Georgetown University, looking at the president's visit to Europe.
Coming up after the news, we'll find out how science fiction could point the way to a more positive future. You're listening to Central Time.